From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A team of U.S. diplomats is meeting North Korean counterparts in the truce village Panmunjom, part of the preparations for a much-anticipated U.S.-North Korea summit next month in Singapore. President Donald Trump, who called off the meeting just last week, tweeted Sunday he believes the North has brilliant potential. But Tufts University Assistant Professor Sung-Yoon Lee is unimpressed.
It's completely unrealistic because economic development and the accretion of wealth as a nation state does not happen overnight. It's not something you can just click on the switch and expect. So while I think that comment was meant to be flattering to North Korea, I don't think it's really persuasive.
The two Korean leaders, Kim Jong-un and President Moon Jae-in, met Saturday. South Korea's Moon saying they both agreed the summit must go on. Ray Blunt, Missouri Republican, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, appeared on the Fox News Sunday telecast.
I think the president's got the North Koreans in a place that any other president might not have managed to get done. He's very willing to reach out in new directions through the South Korean president, willing to meet with the North Korean president, but also willing to walk away. And I do think some things need to be decided before we have that meeting. There needs to be a strong understanding of what both sides, what all three sides, frankly, mean by denuclearization.
President Moon acknowledged Pyongyang and Washington see denuclearization differently, but hoped that that could be resolved through working-level meetings. Guinea's President Alpha Conde has reshuffled his government, replacing 13 of 33 ministers, including the finance and security portfolios. It follows the new Prime Minister, Ibrahima Kasori Fofana, announced last week. This is VOA News. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, under treatment for a lung infection, remains hospitalized in the West Bank, but said to be improving. Hospital spokesman Saeed Sarana said his condition is showing continuous and speedy improvement. The 82-year-old Palestinian leader, hospitalized for more than a week, was supposed to have been released on Sunday. Three members of the Islamic Jihad were killed Sunday by Israeli tank fire in Gaza, east of Rafah. The Israeli military said it took action after soldiers detonated explosive device near the border fence. The anti-graft Transparency International is accusing the Nigerian government of having a slush fund in the hundreds of millions of dollars, allegedly used for security issues, arguing it fuels corruption. The TI report released Monday said some $670 million is being doled out without proper oversight. In Italy, efforts to form a coalition government collapsed Sunday, after President Sergio Mattarella rejected the selection of a Eurosceptic economy minister in the cabinet of Giuseppe Conte, the choice of prime minister by the Five Star Movement and the League parties. The decision leaves the country in political limbo nearly 3 months after inconclusive elections in March. It raises the possibility of yet another election. Australian Will Power won the 102nd Indianapolis 500 race Sunday.
I just couldn't imagine winning a race in front of a crowd like this. This many people, it's just amazing. What an event. I love it.
It was Power's 33rd IndyCar victory, his first Indianapolis 500. Meanwhile, in her final race of a 20-year career, Danica Patrick could not win a second Indy after crashing out halfway through the 200-lap oval. Americans are remembering the nation's war dead Monday, a holiday known as Memorial Day. Sunday, U.S., French, and German military officials took part in ceremonies at an American cemetery in France marking the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Belle Wood. It was a key moment, said Rear Admiral Brent Scott for the untested U.S. Marine Corps.
You know, when they came here, they were a youthful corps and had never really experienced conventional commercial-grade warfare.
The Allied victory, the first major U.S. engagement of the First World War, helped turn the tide against Germany. Former U.S. President George H.W. Bush is back in the hospital, this time in the northeast state of Maine. After experiencing low blood pressure and fatigue, the 93-year-old Bush said to be alert and in no discomfort. A Malian immigrant being praised in Paris for scaling a four-story building in Paris late Saturday to save a child hanging from a ledge. Video of Mamoudou Gassama climbing the building while being cheered by onlookers has gone viral on social media. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonian blames government for the alleged killings of dozens of people.
Ambazonians never use that hotel for any such thing. If anything, Atanganji used that hotel for whatever he was designing against our people.
Christmas Ibini is an elder supporter of the Ambazonian secessionist movement. We'll have a report on the alleged killings from the town of Pinyin. Uganda denies rumors of an Ebola outbreak, and the UN Security Council is poised to impose sanctions this week on more South Sudan officials, including the defense minister.
We are very happy about the sanction which is coming from the UN Security Council. This sanction is long overdue. We have been expecting it.
General Oyet Nathaniel Pirino is head of the governing team for South Sudan rebels. A new report says Guinea-Bissau needs constitutional changes, and Guinea's new prime minister announces his new cabinet. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. English-speaking Cameroonians are burying 30 members of their community who were killed Thursday in the northwestern town of Pinyin. The government has not issued a statement, but residents say the military stormed a local hotel, claiming some people had been taken hostage by suspected armed separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. The residents said the military then killed everyone they saw. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Pinyin.
Hundreds mourn their dead and seek to identify corpses being removed by villagers from a local inn in Cameroon's northwestern town of Pinyin. Among them is 54-year-old Angelica Mulu, who has just identified the body of her 24-year-old son. She says she does not understand what has befallen them, that their children are being killed like flies. She says she has allowed everything into the hands of God, who alone will judge and punish all evildoers, but that she knows her son did not commit any crime to be killed at his young age. Achiri Jonas, an elder in Menka, one of the villages that make up Pinyin, says the 27 corpses they have counted should be buried immediately so they do not decompose and cause health problems to the villagers.
These corpses have to be transferred to their various homes, girls and boys.
Some residents say on Thursday, May 23, a group of five boys forcefully occupied the Star Inn in Menka, claiming to be fighting for the independence of the English-speaking from the French-speaking regions of Cameroon, and started kidnapping people, stealing, extorting, looting and harassing locals. They said Cameroon military invaded the premises and gunned down everyone they saw. In a release circulated on social media, Cameroon military spokesperson Colonel Didier Bajek says the people he describes as terrorists were killed after they had engaged in a firefight with the military. Violence broke out in the English-speaking north, west and south west regions of Cameroon in November 2016 when a strike by English-speaking lawyers and teachers against what they described as marginalization by the French-speaking majority in the bilingual country degenerated into calls for secession. In November 2017, President Paul Biya declared war on the separatists, calling them terrorists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Pinyin, Northwestern Cameroon.
A member of Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonian secessionist movement says government forces directed by new Interior Minister Paul Atanga Nji were responsible for the alleged killings of dozens of people in Anglophone Cameroon over the weekend. Christmas Ibini, an elder supporter of the Ambazonian secessionist, says Mr. Atanga Nji Himself, an Anglophone, was appointed by President Paul Biya to do the bidding of the government. Reached for comment, Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari says he needed more information from the military. Ibini says the government planted criminals in English-speaking Cameroon only to blame their actions on the secessionist movement.
Our intelligence tell us very clearly that since Atangaji was appointed Minister of Territorial Administration, a position that no Anglophone Southern Cameroonian has qualified to occupy since our union, since 1961, was given to him as a reward and a setup, as a reward for his crimes against his own people, against his own brothers and sisters. And they are seeing the writing on the wall very clearly that very soon, the terrorists of La République, Paul Biya and his compatriots, are going to face their crimes against humanity, and they want to pin it on an idiot like Atangaji by giving him a position so that they can turn around and say, oh, these people were killed by one of them.
Let me say that I have a story, a line from the spokesman of the army, Colonel Didier Bajek, saying that the military got some information that this hotel in Menka was being used by separatists. That's why the military went there. So whoever was in there were considered to be anti-government.
Well, listen, that is not true. It would bother me if in your heart of heart you would have any moment that you would sit down and take any information from a terrorist government of a people who have slaughtered their own people to change their own laws and their own constitution to give you information and you believe what he's telling you. I would have wanted you to tell me that a priest or somebody in the church or some other person of credibility gave you that information. No, Ambazonians never used that hotel for any such thing. If anything, Atangaji used that hotel for whatever he was designing against our people.
I don't wish to believe what they say. I'm saying to you just what they said happened.
Well, but I want also for you to believe what I tell you, because the facts are there on my side talking to you.
Christmas Ibini is an elder supporter of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Secessionist Movement of Cameroon. She was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. An official of South Sudan's SPLM-IO rebel movement says the group welcomes any new sanctions on South Sudan government officials for their role in the ongoing civil war. This comes as one report says the UN Security Council is poised to impose new sanctions this week at the request of the United States. The sanctions will include access freeze and travel ban. One of those expected to be sanctioned is Defense Minister Kuo Mayank Jog. General Oyent Nathaniel Pirino is head of the governing team for the SPLM-IO rebels. He says the sanctions have been long overdue.
We are very happy about the sanction. It is coming from the UN Security Council. This sanction is long overdue. We have been waiting for it. We have been expecting it. Kuo Mayank has been the defense minister in the government of South Sudan. He has been responsible for planning of war. He has been responsible for policy of the SPLA. To us, the government of South Sudan through SPLA has been targeting civilians, has been waging targeted killings on South Sudanese since 2013. So this sanction is a way of accountability, and we are happy about the sanction.
But the Security Council has also put sanctions on General Kwan Rambank Chow of your side. He is accused of leading an attack in Biyo State recently.
We feel that this is a double jeopardy because General Kwan Rambank has been fighting in self-defense. He has been fighting the onslaught by the government. As you recall, Taban Dengai and the president, they sent the SPLA to be a state area in an attempt to capture Yuai, in an attempt to capture Akobo. So General Kong Rabang was fighting in self-defense. He has not planned any violation of ceasefire. but they've been fighting, resisting the onslaughts by the government, resisting the fighting which has been planned and orchestrated by the government in this area.
But also, the government of South Sudan can argue that it is fighting in self-defense against you, the SPLM-IO, because it is the government of South Sudan and it must defend the country.
Well, we have signed the cessation of hostilities in Addis Ababa in December. We have not left our defensive position to go and attack the government. It is the government that left their position. It is the government that planned attacks from Juba. Taban Dengai left with a huge team from the government of South Sudan, escorted by the regular SPLA to Lao Nuer area, the BA state area. So they left their position, they planned for the attacks, where Kong Rabang had to defend his position.
I want to ask you, Nathaniel, I have an article suggesting that the Riek Machar side seem to be happy about Raila Odinga, the Kenyan opposition leader, about his role in the peace talks. Is this true? Are you happy? And what role do you see him playing?
We welcome any move, any attempt by international community, by the regional community, in order to resolve the conflict in South Sudan. We are not happy about the protracted conflict, which started in 2013. It has displaced a lot of civilians. It has lost a lot of lives and properties. We want a quick end to this conflict, and we welcome any individual or any body from the region or from the international community who is willing to resolve the conflict. And what we are calling for is a durable peace, a just peace for our people, a peace that will not lead to a relapse to conflict, a relapse to violence, and we are looking for a solution to the crisis in the country.
Mr. Nathaniel, it's so very nice to talk with you, sir.
Welcome. Always I'm ready for you.
General Onyet Nathaniel Pierino is head of the governing team for South Sudan Rebels. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Monday, May 20th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations: Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon, and Radio Banga FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia. Daybreak Africa time is now 18 minutes past the hour. Following the outbreak of the deadly Ebola disease in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda also says there is an outbreak of a similar fatal disease known as Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever in the country. At least one person has been confirmed dead of the disease. Sarah Opendi, Uganda's State Minister for Health, says government is intensifying its efforts to control the disease from spreading further and to make sure that the deadly Ebola does not spread to Uganda. Mugumi Davis Brakarinchi reports from Kampala.
While addressing journalists in Kampala this Sunday, Minister Opendi confirmed the deceased as a resident of Kakumiro District in western Uganda, who died upon arrival at Mubendo Referral Hospital on May 21st.
Blood samples were taken and sent to the Uganda Virus Research Institute. Unfortunately, the same night, he passed on, and thereafter, of course, he was taken back to Kakumiro and buried. The attendants of the deceased, who included his expectant wife and four others, were immediately quarantined and they are closely being monitored.
This is not the first case of Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever in Uganda. The first cases were registered in 2013 and in 2017. Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, or CCHF, is a viral disease which is transmitted from animals to humans. The hosts of the virus can be either domestic or wild animals, including cattle, sheep, and goats. These animals become infected after being bitten by ticks. The virus can remain in their bloodstream for more than 2 weeks. Human transmission may occur when human beings get into contact with the infected ticks or blood of the infected animals or through contact with body fluids of an infected person.
Symptoms include high-grade fever, muscle aches, neck pains, neck stiffness, backache, headache, sore eyes, vomiting, and also bleeding from body openings. So just like the Ebola, which you all know also has bleeding from body parts.
Unfortunately, there is no human vaccine or effective treatment for the disease. A patient with Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever is administered with intravenous fluids. Minister Opendi says observing hygienic practices can help prevent Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever from spreading.
We want to really appeal to the public to desist from taking it upon themselves to bury the deceased. Use protective gear or wear while slaughtering and handling animals. Prevent transmission of the animal diseases to humans. Always wash your hands with soap and water.
She says the government has set up a national rapid response team comprising of officials from the Minister of Health and World Health Organization to help curb the disease from spreading. The team is also charged with ensuring that the Ebola disease does not spread from the DR Congo to Uganda.
All the people who are traveling in to the country from DRC are being screened at the border points. All the border districts have screening facilities. We have staff stationed there. We have staff stationed at our Entebbe International Airport to screen all travelers coming into the country. And of course, this is ongoing. It's not something that it's a one-off. Until DRC will be declared free from the Ebola.
The East African Community Regional Bloc has warned its members that the virus could potentially spread from the DR Congo due to the direct flights between these countries and extensive trade relations. A 2013 outbreak in West Africa lasted more than 2 years and killed more than 11,000 people, mainly from Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Guinea-Bissau's political crisis may be over for the moment, but for long-term political solutions, the country needs serious constitutional changes, says a new report by the Institute for Security Studies and the United Nations. Researcher Maurice Toupin spoke to Ricky Stryak about the changes that need to be made to ensure long-lasting stability in the country.
This has been a source of factor of tension between the prime minister and the president since the adoption of the semi-presidential regime in 1993. One aspect that needs to be clarified in the is the responsibility of the government to the president. The current constitution says that the prime minister is responsible to the government and the president can dismiss the government in the event of a serious crisis preventing the normal functioning of institutions. But the Constitution of Guinea-Bissau doesn't clarify what is a serious political crisis. And this aspect is often been a subject of misinterpretation or abuse by the former president of Guinea-Bissau and in the source of deadlock, political deadlock in Guinea-Bissau. I think it's one example, but there are other many aspects in the constitution that are not clear and that are also source of tension between the prime minister and the president of the republic.
For now, the parliament has reconvened, but is this a short-term solution to a long-term problem? And if yes, what needs to be done to make sure this paralysis of the past almost 3 years does not happen again?
I think the constitutional appointment of Arikis Gomez as the prime minister and the reopening of the parliament are important steps towards the resolution of the recent political and institutional crisis in Guinea-Bissau. But the main objective of this current government is the organization of the election. And this cannot be considered as a lasting solution to the crisis. But in reality, the risk of the country relapse into crisis remain high, particularly in if Guinea-Bissau holds the legislative election without reform, or if the reforms are not implemented right after the election.
What is the status of the EU funds, the nearly 1 billion euros that were pledged to Bissau and then put on hold during the political crisis?
Yes, in March 2015, Guinea-Bissau organized a roundtable in Brussels to finance his Terra Blanca development plan. And over 1 billion euros were announced. But since the outbreak of the crisis in August 2015, the main partner, including the EU, has frozen the allocation of these funds. And since then, There is no action noted to unblock these funds.
That was Maurice Toupin, a researcher with the Institute for Security Studies. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. The new Prime Minister of Guinea, Ibrahima Kasori Fofana, has announced his cabinet that some in the opposition say is not different from that of his predecessor. Ibrahim Kone is president of the Francophone Press Union in Conakry.
Mr. Kasori can do better than Mr. Lula. Why? The first thing is Mr. Kasori was politicians, and he was in the government, Lansana General, Lansana County government, 20 years ago. He was taking position like Minister of Economy. And after that, he go back to America to have some study, and he get the graduation, the PhD graduation in pharma. And when after that, he come back to Guinea in 2000, he get into the politician. That's why he got experience and know, you know what people need in this country, which kind of criticize people saying, because he was working, Mr. Kasori was working with the opposition people. After that, he come to have an alliance with Mr. Alpha Conde to come to the position now, where he take the position to be the first Premier Minister. And Mr. Lula, he never be Premier Minister, he never come to the government before he get that position. It's two people very quite different. Mr. Lula was a manager for mining company. He was never get to the government. He don't know people really and the politician way. And Mr. Kasori, though the politician was, Mr. Kasori is a politician. He know what the people need, and he know what the people expected. You know, today we have some small problems, but really we got so many need to work and to improve the life of the Guinean people, because really this is not quite easy for us. We got so many things we have to work on now to put a level of up in this country.
President Alpha Conde had been criticized by the opposition for having a government that did not represent the people. Do you think now this new cabinet will solve that problem?
Yeah, I think so, and I can tell you exactly a new cabinet can solve out that problem, because really, we got people from the opposition, from the movement, President Che, and for the civilian society. We got so many areas in the country of the population as well. I said that new cabinet with Mr. Kasori can do more and can do better.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Ibrahima Kone is the president of the Francophone Press Union in Conakry. He was speaking with me from the Guinean capital. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. English-speaking Cameroonians are burying 30 members of their community who were killed on Thursday in the northwestern town of Pinyin. And that is it for this Monday, May 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley. I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a productive week.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.